Tax breaks for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Do they make sense? The House Republican budget. What's the message to the governor? Mike Pence says no to Medicaid expansion, a yes vote for mass transit, and a marijuana bill up in smoke. That plus Valentine's Day in the clerk's office and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 15,
2013. Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, a plan for up to $100 million in improvements at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, financed by tax breaks of up to $5 million a year, is advancing at the State House. The vote in the Senate Appropriations Committee was unanimous for a bill to permit the sale of state bonds for the upgrade at the home of the Indy 500. The vote came after a video presentation that reminded committee members of the history and notoriety of the famous racetrack. Chairman Luke Kenley.
This is an investment which will actually prove profitable to the state in terms of taxes collected based on the successes that I expect the Speedway to accomplish over the coming years.
To the people who say, why is the state helping out a private concern? What's the message to them?
You can open the newspaper almost every day and see here in Indiana and in almost every state in the country, economic incentives are offered by public entities to sustain and attract important industries.
Is public support for the Speedway in the public interest? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, there were no questions at that meeting. Should senators give this more scrutiny?
It's been given a lot of scrutiny. This has been in a process for a better part of 2 years. Although it's been very quiet, it's been in the works. There was discussion about this during the last legislative session, but they decided at that point that it still needed some work and needed to be rolled out. So this has received a lot of scrutiny, and it also now is receiving a lot of support because it's well thought out. Senator Kenley made the point at the end of the hearing, after everybody talked about their love for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the 500, that this is a good deal for the taxpayers of the state of Indiana, and that we will more than see our return on investment over the course of time with this investment in the Speedway. And this is a deal where the Speedway over the years, this is a 100-year-old facility, and with all the new tracks that have come on board in places like Kansas, Kentucky, Illinois, people have other options to go other places to see races where the amenities are better, and now's the time for them to step up and do the things they need to do to make this more competitive. That's what they're doing.
On the issue of the age of the facility, there was recently an agreement made between the U.S. Attorney's Office and the Speedway to make improvements to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act, and some of this money would go to help meet that compliance.
Right, and that's important because, you know, there are disabled people who would love to see the races too, and they can, as Mike says, go other places. But I think what's important is that the development of the city of Speedway, as well as, you know, Marion County, is not completely dependent on that track, but largely dependent on that track in Speedway's instance. And it seems to me that it has to maintain its competitive edge. And I hope that when they make it ADA accessible and improve the track and all that, they put in some more women's restrooms.
Part of the plan is to upgrade restrooms. I can tell you that.
There, right,
yeah. Hey, you know, does this make sense for taxpayers?
Well, there's a risk. There's no question that there's a risk, but it's not a very big risk when you're talking about the 100-year history of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And the way it'll work is that, you know, the money will be used to leverage additional money that will go in to make these improvements be paid off. These kinds of bonds are very, very common in the government, the way it works. So it's not a lot of risk. And it is for an asset that a lot of people think is very important, and I would agree with. You know, so goes the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, so goes a lot of things in Indiana. And if we consider ourselves a capital for entertainment and sports, you got to have the IMS.
Yet there's been a lot of secrecy out there. We don't know how many tickets they sell. We don't know how many people attend the race. We don't.
It is a lot.
It is a lot, and it's a private corporation. Should some of those questions be asked or answered?
Oh, I think. Well, some of that used to be, you know, basically a state secret. I remember there were bills back, you know, a dozen years or more ago that were ostensibly designed. They were taxation or revenue bills, but they were designed to find out once and for all how many people attended the Indianapolis 500-mile race each year. And because it was, and since then, you know, their aerial photographs have been analyzed and experts have been. I mean,
Mario Andretti hired college students to go count the seats.
Yeah, it's. But I don't think it's a secret. I mean, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, we've seen actual attendance figures that have been released in the past 5 years or so. So it's not the secret it used to be. But so this is really about revenue, and I think where the state would encounter more difficulty is if it were. The phrase, of course, we hear so often is picking winners and losers. You know, everybody, no one wants the government picking winners and losers. But this is a known commodity. It's already a winner. It's been a winner for you know, since 1911. So it's not as if the state is saying, we think you're our future, you're an upstart, we're gonna support you. The other thing is the state isn't, and this is, again, the semantics in the framing, giving it so much as allowing them to keep the money, the tax revenue that they're already generating. I know it's a fine distinction, but it's not as if it's a state grant.
But it's the same sort of deal that's been done for stadiums downtown and was done for Circle Center Mall, I think.
The Indianapolis Motor Speedway has a $510 million fiscal impact a year on the Indiana economy. And they had suppliers. They showed a map the other day in the hearing that showed that they had suppliers in almost two-thirds of the counties, which I think was striking to members of the committee. When you think about the hotel room rentals, restaurants, rental cars, everything that comes with it, we'd be crazy not to continue to invest in the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
I concur with that, but I think to the question of scrutiny, there's nothing wrong with that, and I hope it does get some scrutiny as it goes through the rest of the process. And secondly, I think it's also an acknowledgement that times have changed for the IMS. It's not able to do this on its own, whereas in the past it might have been able to, and there's been a lot of pride in the fact that they've never had to have any assistance before, so I think that that's another thing that's different here.
They're getting older.
Aren't we all, Ann?
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, do you support tax breaks for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway? Your choices are A, yes, it's an important institution, B, no, it's a private operation, or C, I trust lawmakers to do the right thing. Last week's question was, should Indiana legalize Sunday sales of packaged liquor? 47% said yes. 49% said no. 4% said what we need is new limits on liquor sales. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The House Republican version of the state budget has been released, and there are significant differences between it and the so-called jobs budget put out by Governor Mike Pence. It spends more for schools, universities, and highways. It doesn't have the Pence tax cut, the 10% cut in the income tax. It also doesn't have an automatic taxpayer refund. The language is still there, but there's not enough money to trigger it. Ann Delaney, is that a better budget?
It's much more fiscally responsible. I don't think there's enough money for K-12 in that budget, but it's better, certainly, than the one the governor proposed.
2% increase the first year, 1% the second year.
Yeah, so it's better, and they're using it, if I understand it correctly, they're financing some of the higher ed initiatives, and for example, buildings with cash,
right,
which is an unusual thing to do as well. But in addition to that, they had that little sleight of hand with the BMV and state police. They're moving them off the gas revenue onto the general fund budget, which I always find interesting because one of the objections to mass transit is it isn't going to be self-sustaining. And I think we've just given up the fiction that roads are self-sustaining with that move.
House Republicans turning down the governor's tax cut at this point. They keep saying we're open to it, but is there a split here?
No. In fact, they're still saying they're open to it. And as we've said repeatedly on here, until we get the revenue forecast in April, we're not really going to know what kind of money there is available. I will say this. That budget that was released this week probably goes farther to help an eventual tax cut that the governor wants because of the very thing that Ann said. Paying for those buildings in cash at universities now kind of clears the decks for future consideration that you're not going to have to worry about later, and other things that are in there, including taking the automatic tax cut off the table. That makes it more possible to have the tax cut that the governor wants eventually, if not at the end of this year, probably next year, or somewhere down the road. So as the economy gets better and they deal with the recessionary things that they wanted to pay for, like education, more money for education and other things, it's still a possibility yet this year, but certainly down the road it certainly is.
Okay, but the governor wanted the automatic taxpayer refund too. So right. You, from the Pence budget, you had two tax cuts. Now you got none. This is a pretty strong statement.
It is, and Mike Pence, when he took office, coming out of a legislative body himself, having spent the recent years, six terms or whatever it was in Congress, talked about how he appreciated the independence of the legislative branch. So this is... Be careful what you wish for. He's getting the independence of the legislative branch. And I think that
But he issued a statement today saying he's very disappointed.
Absolutely.
And Hoosiers deserve better.
It was a very strong statement.
He also said that he realized that they've offered a potential
tax cut. But here's the thing why. I mean, I'm sure if you're a new governor, this is the linchpin of your agenda. You want to get it passed. However, keep in mind that his predecessor, who finished by most accounts pretty successful tenure as governor, Mitch Daniels, his first attempt to as it related to taxes was shot down by Republicans in his own party.
The legislature likes to point out that they're in control of
their state.
Yeah. Do they get their way?
Yes, they will. And I think it is interesting that they didn't even include it as kind of a courtesy, if you will, to let it ride into the process and have some currency later in the session. It's very unlikely that the Senate would put this in. So if this bill passes the House, it doesn't have that language in it, it's probably done for the year.
And you know, Scott Pelath, Democratic leader, says that he's going to make sure that there's an up or down vote on the Pence tax cut.
Well,
he just wants to put Republicans on the line, does he?
Oh, just like Mike Pence was willing to, you know, the tax credit that Mitch Daniels was going to give, he's willing to flush that away so he can get his own tax break. There's politics in this, but there's also fiscal responsibility. And that budget is more fiscally responsible than the governor's. There's no question.
The education component is what's getting most of the attention. That's what you mentioned. But And Ann touched on the roads and infrastructure and changes. That actually, I think, is what has probably a lot of local leaders across the state breathing a little bit easier, because they're looking at significant expenses to maintain and repair roads and bridges.
They should be self-sufficient. And,
well, they're
if
not.
They're not
they're
self-sufficient,
not. They're not.
We should
unless
rip
you want to make
the
every, unless you want to make Meridian State.
I predict right now that you're going to see another tax cut at the end of this process. It's a matter of which one.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Governor Mike Pence informed the federal government this week that he's opposed to an expansion of the Medicaid program available under the Affordable Care Act. Democrats in the General Assembly believe his decision is a mistake. The Democrats point to Republican governors, including Rick Snyder in Michigan, who have elected to buy in to health care reform.
We think they're right. So the easy answer is just to join them and say we're all here to support the expansion of Medicaid.
All of the states surrounding Indiana plan to expand Medicaid.
I don't think we want to be known as the island of the uninsured.
Minority Leader Tim Lannan there, John Kinzenberger. Would it be a problem for Indiana to be the only state in the Midwest without a Medicaid expansion?
Yeah, it would. And I think really what we're coming down to is the terms under which that will be done. And that's where the governor, I think, is putting a flag in the ground and saying that he thinks that it should be done within the parameters of the HIP program here.
The Healthy Indiana program.
It's already in place.
Daniels.
Right. And there's an increasing willingness by the federal government to work on the negotiation for that kind of thing. So I think we're still in the phase of trying to figure out where it's going to end up. But I would really be surprised if Indiana does not expand Medicaid in some fashion.
Well, what Governor Pence is saying is that he will only do it if it's under the guidelines of the HIP plan, but if the federal government agrees to use the HIP plan, he'll then consider it. He's not committing to it. And Democrats are saying that this is all just an emotional reaction to Politics.
Yeah. I think so. Look back at Obamacare, which is the term that was used by opponents of Affordable Care Act to create sort of the bogeyman aspect of it. And I see, still see vestiges of that. So clearly, if I don't think Indiana will end up not expanding. Now, I guess from a political strategic standpoint, if Mike Pence can get the waiver he wants from Kathleen Sebelius and the folks in the federal agencies involved, and says we can do it, we'll have the expansion we need, 400,000, but we'll do it through the Healthy Indiana plan. Well, guess what? Then he can declare victory. Everybody who was going to be covered can be covered, and then he's happy. But something's going to give. What won't happen is what, as John suggested, you can't have Indiana being an island where it simply is not providing that coverage.
Well, the one nearby governor who's saying no is Scott Walker in Wisconsin, and he and Pence are close. Is he taking a cue from Walker?
No, I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think that John and John are both right, that you're going to see some kind of expansion. It's a matter of how you're going to do it. The HIP plan is the right start for this for Indiana. It's working. Emergency room visits are down for those people that are involved in this program. The preventative measures are up, which is what you're looking for in the Obamacare plan. And so if we can save money and do this and build on what we already have, that's the way to go.
3,900 people in the HIP program right now.
And
we're talking about an expansion of 400,000.
We're going to do 200,000 with the HIP program.
Here, let's do it.
And after how many years, we're still
let's
at 3,900. It has not worked in Indiana.
It is working.
And the thing that gets me about this is he writes to Catherine.
Insurers don't like it.
Right.
And he writes to Kathleen Sebelius and asks for some additional compensation with a really snarky letter saying, we all know Medicaid hasn't worked and we don't want any part of it. But correct me if I'm wrong, I thought the difference, this is not traditional Medicaid. What they're talking about is subsidizing the premiums to buy private health care insurance for these people. If they're already employed.
You're mixing the exchange
level,
into that. I mean, there is.
But we're turning our back
on that
subsidizing.
This is about covering the people who can't afford insurance on the exchange.
Right, but it's a little bit of a blend at some level, too. And so, it's pretty complex.
But the basic line on this is if you're making $35,000 a year and you're in the exchange, you're going to have some subsidy. If you're making less than $35,000 and you're employed, they're going to say, the hell with you. And that's an untenable position for Indiana.
Remember, there are other big players. You talked about the insurance industry, but we also have the Indiana Hospital Association and the healthcare provider industry, which is heavily involved. So it's not as if you have it locked.
Economic development.
It's a clash of the titans, really, in many
they're
ways.
Also getting healthcare, and we're paying for it under poor relief.
Moving on, the mass transit bill, backed by Mayor Greg Ballard, has now advanced farther than it did in two previous efforts to win approval in the General Assembly. This was Transit Day at the State House with a rally to win support for the bill that could lead to a hike in the local option income tax to pay for a new transit system. You're willing to pay more taxes?
I am definitely willing to pay more taxes, yes.
The bill just passed down to the Ways and Means Committee 20-2.
The bill's author, Jerry Torr, broke the news after a lengthy committee meeting where he explained the benefits.
Cleaner, nicer, quieter buses and some routes that would be quicker and so forth.
The idea of better transit in Marion and Hamilton counties and eventually beyond won support from Democrats.
Economic development, it's about getting people to work.
And from Republicans.
I'm also quite confident in the fact that when you look at the way our city's handled large projects in the past, that we've shown the capacity to do it and do it right.
Todd Houston of Fishers there, preceded by Greg Porter of Indianapolis. John Schwannis, what's different about this issue this year?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, the landscape's a little different because it's not an election year, so this sensitivity or hypersensitivity to being supportive of a tax increase, which, again, before I jumped on, supporters of this plan say it's not a tax increase. It's, once again, arming voters with the opportunity to boost their own contribution to...
creates a referendum on a tax increase.
Right. So it's not maybe as highly charged as it was last year when Grover Norquist and others waded in. People see the needs, you look at some of the economic factors, and you also have local government officials around the state through Trust Locals, the Indiana Conference of Mayors, weighing in, supporting it, I think because they say if this model where we can basically give us the tools to raise
Maybe
our own revenue.
Work for us.
It might work for us. So you have, I think, a wider spread support. It's not an Indianapolis versus the rest of the state issue this time.
Two no votes, in fact, were both from representatives in contiguous counties to Marion County. Eric Turner of Hamilton County and Jeffrey Thompson of Hendricks County, and they're worried about people in the far reaches of those counties paying for taxes and the bus lines won't reach them. Is that legitimate?
Well, I think it's a legitimate concern, but I also think it's short-sighted because if you look at the way central Indiana is expanding and is growing, it includes all of those counties contiguous to Marion County. So it may be just a rationale for their own reticence about it that John expressed. The reality is all of those contiguous counties are part of the metro area and will only get more so.
Can you create a bill that would tax some of the people in those counties and still
it's
get this
through?
It's
kind of hard to do, isn't it? But, you know, the fact of the matter is it has the potential to benefit all of them, and not just in bus service. We've got to get beyond the bus service into the light rail idea. And that, it seems to me, would benefit all the contiguous counties. And it's a good thing. It is an engine of economic growth, particularly with young people that we're trying to attract to move here.
Looks like it's going to get out of the House. Jerry Torres predicting a big vote. Is there trouble in the Senate?
I think they still have a lot of work to do, no question about it. But, look, it's got to happen sooner or later. You can't have the growth that we're having in metropolitan central Indiana and not have this kind of transportation available. The difference this time is the coalition did a better job of selling it to members of the House from all walks of life about what it means to jobs and getting people to and from the core of the city and what that can mean to future growth of the state, and they've done a good job this time.
And Mayor Balich's done a great job of tearing up the downtown streets, making it impossible going to back and forth, and making the case for mass transit.
It's called progress.
A bill to decriminalize the possession of marijuana will not get a hearing in the General Assembly this year. State Senate Committee Chairman Mike Young said this week that the bill is dead. The Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey found 53% support decriminalization, with just 41% opposed. And that's why author Karen Tallien will try again next year.
Ohio has had a decriminalization bill for years. And, you know, and the whole state of Ohio hasn't turned into potheads. So, we think that there's a lot of, nationally, there's a broad base of support for this.
It's taken a long time and a long uphill struggle to even get this issue noted. But we do know that it's noted.
Neil Smith there from the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Mike McDaniel, why not permit a vote?
Somebody asked me this week, 20 years from now, will we be debating whether or not we can have Sunday sales of marijuana? it's not an issue whose time has come. It's kind of happened in a hurry, and these kind of things in the General Assembly take a lot of time. And
well, it has happened in some other
states.
And
people are going to have to get used to the idea of what they're really trying to accomplish here. Yeah. And that sale hasn't been made.
Yeah. And Indiana's the kind of place that likes to see what goes on in other states.
I know, but do we have to watch all other 49 states before we act? I mean,
there have been about 20 that have acted.
Scarce resources for criminal justice. It seems to me we should take this off the table and, you know, But God forbid we should have some, you know, stand-up people in the General Assembly, besides, obviously, Senator Tallien, stand up and say, you know, it's time. It's time to lead the way instead
there
of being
others.
About
there
it.
Are others there.
Senator Young, there are some
sounds
others.
Like, he sounds like he's going to give it a vote next year.
Well, I think that there is incremental progress here. And for this issue, any kind of progress has got to be seen as very positive because it's an easy knee-jerk to be against this. And so that you've got Mike Young on board, Karen Tallien vowing to push it forward, I think that's probably very good progress.
Okay. Finally, Valentine's Day made for a special occasion at the Marion County Clerk's Office this week.
By the power vested in me in the state of Indiana, I declare that you are husband and wife. Those whom I have joined together, let no one ever separate. You may kiss your bride.
Marion County Clerk Beth White performed civil marriage ceremonies at her office at no charge. But couples were asked to make a $50 contribution to the American Heart Association's Go Red for Women campaign. The clerk has married 341 couples since 2007 and has raised more than $15,000 and Delaney, are other public officials missing a great opportunity here?
I think so. I think this is a great thing that Beth White does, and it's for a good cause, and the people seem to like it. They keep flocking there. I think it's great.
You know, I was in the clerk's office on Valentine's Day.
Did you get married? It's
great entertainment. Let's just say there was an assortment of couples there.
Well, that's probably true in any marriage venue.
I'm not sure where you're going with this. Yeah, I'm just staying out of it.
Yeah. Just,
good idea, Mike.
No same-sex couples, right? That was Mark Kruzan in Bloomington that was doing that ceremony.
Kruzan,
yeah.
In Bloomington, that's
different,
right.
Different mayor, different city.
Happy
different
Valentine's
public
Day.
Official.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast or starting Monday. You can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.